Tonight, what I'd like to do is present a unique approach to dealing with stress and anxiety, which is based on Torah and uses tools from psychotherapy. I call this approach the active approach, and I'll explain why in a little while. But maybe I'll start by asking a question, just throwing out a question. Our era has been called the era of anxiety. So there's a lot of anxious feeling around in society in general, Jewish community. I've been told by communal rabbis that this time of year, there are many women who have a desire to run away from home, to leave everything. Yeah, would that be true? But to actually leave and get away, because it all gets a bit too much. I'm sorry? Is there
Not anyone here.
No, I have a desire. They may not do it, but they have a desire. So I would just like to ask, to throw out a question. Why do you think, in general, that there's, what do you think the reasons could be that stress is such an anxiety is such an issue nowadays? Any suggestions?
Well, it's very fast-paced.
Okay. Any other suggestions?
Lacking perspective.
Okay, great.
We're in a technological revolution. There's so much change going on.
Right. That's interesting. I've asked this question to many groups, and that answer actually comes up a lot. It's just we're being bombarded by so much. Maybe I could add also financial issues. Financial is a major issue. The amount of financial pressure that's on people is another major issue. So what I'd like to share with you is that about 12 years ago, I worked in outreach work. I worked for Aish for about 10 years, and I changed my career to go into psychotherapy. And when I was doing my training course, I was hit by a number of different approaches to counseling, to psychotherapy. And I basically had the question, how do we bring these two together? And I read just about everything I could on the subject, and I thought about it at length, and I was helped by a certain approach that I discovered by Rav Yisrael Salanter. It's on the sheets in front of you, and he talks about a three-stage approach to self-development, to overcoming basically any issue that a person wants. If you go through these three stages, this is going to help you. The first step is called awareness. That a person has to understand themselves. The person has to understand, just like in terms of a medical model, if a person's worrying, what is it that they're worrying about? The second stage would be, once you understand it, to control it, and ultimately to transform it. So these three stages actually go through in Pesach itself. The first stage, philosophically, what we do is we search for the chometz. The Talmud tells us that chometz is a symbol of the Yetzer Hara. We search for the chometz, which in some ways represents our searching for our Yetzer Hara. The Siva Shalom says that it's meant to work us up to search, look inside. The second stage is Pesach itself, is where, as it were, we become free. We go out of our personal Mitzrayim and we free ourselves from that. The last stage is that we go back to eat after Pesach to eating bread. And ultimately what we do is we work towards Shavuos, through the Omer period, where we take the bread, which is a symbol of the Yetzer, and we use it, we bring it to Korban on Shavuos, and we transform the Yetzer to help us serve us. So we've got these three stages. In terms of control, there's three steps. There can be three steps that can help us gain control. Thought, speech, and action. Thought, just using the Balatanya explains that we have these are called the three garments of the soul. Thinking, speaking, and action. When I got this picture clear, I saw that different psychological approaches emphasize different parts. Some approaches talk like a cognitive approach. We'll say, you know why the reason we have psychological problems is we're not thinking about things clearly. Other approaches may say more psychodynamics, and even if you don't understand the terms, don't worry, you don't need to. Or psychoanalytic will say you have to understand the psychological unconscious behavior behind it. You have to understand what's going on. Others will be more behavioral. You've got to do things about it. So let's put these together on a practical level. Don't worry if you haven't got it totally. It's in front of you here, and I'll explain how it all works on a practical level. Maybe it would help if you could think about one thing that you're worrying about. It could be Pesach. It could be anything.
Just one.
One's enough. So, what do we... The first stage is gaining self-awareness. So, when a person is worrying, say about Pesach, often what they're worrying about, they have conscious worries, but they're unconscious worries that are going on, or subconscious worries that are going on underneath. So I'll give you an example. A person, let's just say a person is told they're going to lose their job. Now, on a conscious level, they may have one worry. You know, I'm going to lose my job. But if you look underneath it, there can often be deeper fears. And there's a tool in counseling called the downward arrow. The downward arrow basically means that when you have a worry, you ask yourself, so what? Why is this important? So we take a guy called Joe. Joe is a IT worker, and he is he's worrying about his job. He's at work. They've just had two or three people who have been asked to leave the firm. He goes home at night, and he can't sleep. He's worrying. He's exhausted. He's tired. What is going on? A person may say to him, "Look, if you lose your job, you get another job." If we use the downward arrow method and we ask, "Why is that so bad? If you lose your job, maybe what? So what?" So he'll say, "Well, if I lose my job, then maybe I won't be able to get another job." Okay, so you're unemployed. You're unemployed for a while. Yeah. Why don't you do some retraining? So then he may say, "Well, I'm worried that I won't be able to pay in that time. I'll be worried I won't be able to pay the bills, and therefore I have to move out of my house. Maybe put my kids out of the school we're at." Okay, that's not great, but that you can do that. Then you go, what's the underlying worry? Maybe what the person's worrying about is unconsciously he won't be able to cope with the worry that's occurring. He'll crack up, he'll have a strain, his marriage will fall apart. So on a conscious level, what the person is worrying about is thinking about losing his job. On an unconscious level, or what we call, colloquially subconscious level, there's some deeper worrying going on. Is this making sense? So what Rav Yisrael Salanter speaks a lot about, and he spoke about before Freud, is that we have to understand our subconscious motivations. We have to understand that it's not just what's happening consciously, but often when we're worrying, there's a fear that's underneath it that we may not be aware of that is really bothering us. Again, is making sense? So, what a person has to do when they're worrying is think, what is it that's kind of the worst case scenario that they're thinking about? Once they get clear on that, they can start. Now, it could also be, which happens quite commonly, is that people have had past experiences, which difficult or traumatic experiences, and that also comes up. The person says, "Well, this has happened to me 5 or 6 times before." So when they're worrying, that worry is exacerbated by the fact that there's other memories, often can be traumatic memories from the past, that also come up. Okay, So a person understands, okay, this is my worry, this is why it's occurring, this is the root of it. It's a kind of like a medical model. You have a bad foot, you understand it. So how does a person go on to control it? So we're going to use this three-step method called thought, speech, and action. The first is the power of thought. Now, in psychotherapy, there's a whole area of psychological teaching called cognitive therapy. Cognitive therapy... Okay, cognitive therapy is essentially where we're looking at is based on the idea that people have problems because they think incorrectly. They jump to conclusions. They are let's give an example. When a person worries, they immediately think that the worst thing is going to occur. The worst case scenario is going to occur, and it goes round and round in their mind over and over again. Is that making sense? So they work themselves into a state because they think this is going to happen. I once had a guy who came to me, and he came because he couldn't sleep. He had insomnia. So every night, what would happen is he would lie down on his bed, and as soon as he laid on his bed, he would start worrying, you know what, I can't sleep. And he would worry and worry and worry until he eventually got himself into a terrible state. So I asked him the question, what is the worst thing that's ever happened to you? You know, so he said, you know what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you? I stayed up for 32 hours. 32 hours I was up. And then I said, what happened after that? He goes, I fell asleep. So I said, well, look, if you fall asleep, and that's the worst that's going to happen, you didn't jump out of a window, if you can just cope with that, then you don't need to worry so much, because the worst thing that's going to happen is you're just going to have to be uncomfortable for a little while, and then you'll fall asleep. I'll give you another example, and it's an example that happened to me, is that about 10, maybe 15 years ago, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I had some pains in my chest. Now, my father, Zichron of Rocha, had a heart attack. He passed away because of a heart attack. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I had terrible pains in my chest, and I thought, I'm having a heart attack. I called my doctor, and thank God, it was one of the doctors that you can call in the middle of the night. He opened up the phone, and he asked me a few questions. And what did I find? He said, you know what, this doesn't sound like a heart attack. Have you been under a lot of stress recently? And I said, I have. He said, look, have some tea, have a water, and then call me in the morning if there's any problems. After that, I sort of had a drink, and immediately what happened was all the pain and all the suffering went away. All the thoughts of being rushed to a hospital, surrounded by nurses, thinking that this was it, suddenly disappeared. Why did that occur? Because there's a nice acronym for fear. Fear, F-E-A-R, is false evidence that appears real. Often, what we're worrying about looks very scary, but in fact, it's a mirage from our imagination that's being brought up. So I don't know how many people have had experiences of worrying about something incessantly, and it wasn't actually that bad when it came true. Has this happened, or it gets worse? Now, we're also going to deal with the reality. We're not going to just say that all fear is not real. But Revolver explains that the Yetzer of horror works through dimion, through imagination. All kinds of imaginations. And for this topic, we have the idea that we can imagine the worst things that occur, but it may not be real at all. It becomes and therefore what we need to do is look at it and break it down and go, is this something which is in my imagination? Is this something which is being projected from past? And we can also ask ourselves a few basic questions like, how likely is this to occur? And what's more, if it was to occur, the worst case scenario, how could I best cope with it? Because if you feel deep down, you can cope with it, and often when things do occur, we cope with it much better than we thought, then you can already get a certain amount of what we'd say, menuchas nefesh. Second step in control, let's look at the emotions, the power of speech. Now, we know from Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei, who teaches, Darga Belev Ish Yisachena, yeah? That if you have a worry in your heart, speak it out, share it. Now, and a good word will turn it into joy. The basic power of speech and sharing is very, very powerful. And in fact, is the basis of all counselling. That in counselling, basically the idea of a cathartic approach of sharing your feelings with another person is probably central and fundamental to the whole thing. And that's why therapists are trained to be able to listen and what's known as holding feelings. I don't know if you've ever had experience, but you're worried about something and you share it with somebody. And they go, that's terrible, you know? That's horrific. What are you going to do about that? And they freak you out totally, and you're actually more worried afterwards than you were before. Yeah? Those are not the people to share with. if you learn anything tonight, yeah, but do not share with those people because they're going to freak you out more. They go, that is, you're never going to make a living. You know, I knew it. I know people who've had that. They've had nervous breakdowns. This is terrible, yeah? But in psychotherapy, and really, this is one of the, every godel, every great rabbi really has these qualities, is to be able to stay with another person's feelings without necessarily saving them. You don't jump in and go, you know what you should do, blah, 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 do this. But allow a person to express the full depth of their emotions without coming in and without being freaked out. Yeah? In some ways, it's actually fascinating that in psychotherapy, this is what a mother does for their children. They hold their feelings. When a child comes home and they go to their mother, you know what, I've had this problem at school. A child learns to be able to hold their feelings by a mother saying, you know what, it's okay, let's listen to it, and allowing them to speak out. Now, often when that doesn't occur, unfortunately, in childhood, when people aren't allowed, when they come home and their parents have been freaked out more than they are, that's where one of the reasons why some of the problems occur. But essentially, to be able to share, now we're in English society, we're a society which is essentially fairly repressed. Yeah, where people don't talk about their feelings. I'm sure women are much better at it than men. Men have more of a problem. And one of the things I find in marriage therapy is that men have to be taught how to listen. And they have to be taught that, you know, if you're familiar with the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, yeah? It's a universal truth. I counsel Jews, non-Jews. Often what's fundamental is that men do not know how to listen in this way. They'll just fix it. But it's the same with anything. If you've got a real problem and you can share it in a whole way and it can be held, that will help a person. And going a little bit deeper, if there are issues from the past that have been coming up, then to be able to share those issues can be very important, very profound, because what's happening is the issues from the past are being projected onto the present. So therefore, if a person has trauma in the past, then what happens is things are being re-triggered. Number three, action. Now, again, many people may be aware of, when you have a real issue and a real fear, taking action, facing the fear, as the well-known phrase, feel the fear and do it anyway. Yeah, You're scared of public speaking. You're scared of anything. You've got to face it head on. And by doing it head on, making a plan to essentially to do it, will help a person. Let me give you a tour example of this. The Alto of Navardoc wanted to train his students to overcome the fear of social pressure. Again, there's a whole historical perspective on this. He wanted to train them to fight under the Russians and to be fearless. What did he do? It's a well-known thing. He taught them to go into shops and to ask the things which they weren't selling. You know, to go to the bakery, to ask for nails, to go to the Marcona to offer stamps, yeah? Things which would naturally embarrass them. Why did he do that? Because he wanted to train them, but through action, that you know what? It's not the end of the world if you embarrass yourself, yeah? And social pressure doesn't have to, if you take actions, and personally, I once tried this. I was in Eish Yeshiva, Rabbi Weinberg, Zichrono Baruch, gave a whole talk about this. And he said, why don't you try it? So I was in the old city, the Malkulet, and I decided, you know, I'd try it. I'd go down to the Malkulet and I'd ask for some whale meat. So maybe you can try and kosher king afterwards. Go down. It's pretty scary. You go up to the, you know, whatever, you go up to the waiter. How's your whale meat over here? You think I'm going to think you're an absolute nut. Well, I walked in. I was very a bit nervous, about maybe at 18. I go, can I have some whale meat? Well, I kind of got it out of my mouth. And the guy didn't flinch. He goes, no, we don't have any whale meat here. Little did I know that every year the rabbi gave the same talk. And it's kind of been bombarded by people asking for whale meal for many years. But what's the point? The point is when we take action, a person is scared of public speaking. If you're going to be scared, yeah? But once you do it and you've done it once, you've done it twice, you will overcome it. So having a plan, a practical action plan to face the fear, and if we're looking at Pesach, you know, one of the things we could think about is what's the priorities, you know? If I run out of time, what can be put aside? You know, then a person can deal with it in a way which is not overwhelming. You know, at least we'll have food. You know, it won't maybe not be perfect. If a person's looking for perfection the whole time, that's another reason which causes anxiety. So creating an action plan to deal with your issue will, and when you, and the Chinuch tells us that doing, the reason why so many say Torah concepts are around doing is because when we do, it pulls our thoughts and our emotions. So just by doing and facing things, we automatically go from this victim to a person who's got more control. Okay, but there's another aspect of doing which is also important. We mentioned the Chazal of Yisachena, Darga Balev Ish Yisachena. So the Gemara actually has two pshatim on what's that mean. It means speaking out, but there's also a pashat which means to ignore your worry. Now, that may seem completely contradictory to everything we said. They said, you know, you're worried about Pesach, don't think about it. So it seems a little bit strange. So what does this chazal mean? I think the Rabbeinu Yonah explains that maybe learning Torah is one of the examples. But it actually comes up in cognitive behavioral therapy, the same concept. And that is, if we spend, and maybe I'll give an example, also from my shiv days, somebody was, again, that was worrying about what he's going to do after yeshiva, and he met with Rabbi Pliskin, and Rabbi Pliskin said, look, I want you to worry 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening. That's your worry time. The rest of the time, get on with learning, yeah? Every time a worry comes up, you go, that's not time for worrying, I'll worry later. I'll think about it, I'll deal with it later. Don't spend your whole time worrying. Do make sure that you're living in a productive way. So that there's a famous psychotherapist called Windy Dryden. He does a run round here every every morning, apparently he runs, gets his bagels or whatever in Kosher Paradise, not too far away. I met him on a course. He's written 200 books on psychotherapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy is his thing. He was a professor in Goldsmiths University in London. One, you know, trained thousands of psychotherapists. So what does he do? He goes for a run every morning. Yeah. Why? Because when we run and we do exercise, he's not coming from a fitness point of view, because it's going to lift your spirits. Running itself or exercise itself has been shown to be as powerful as having antidepressants, you know, without the side effects. It releases. Now, that's one example. But if we are worrying, a person has to be careful on an obvious level of eating properly, of sleeping properly, of doing things which are healthy for yourself. Now, there's one actual example I'd like to share over here, and that is breathing exercises. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but a simple behavioral technique that a person can do, which can help them relax, is by learning to calm themselves by breathing. I don't know if people are familiar, some people aren't familiar. So what I'd like to do is, I've done this with other audiences, I think it could be healthy now, is I'd just like to give you one practical tool that can be very powerful. And I've had people who had panic attacks, and they've come with panic, they haven't been able to get to work without actually getting off the tube because they've been so scared. So what I've done is teach them to breathe and relax. And when you breathe and relax, it affects the whole body and it calms you down. So what I'd like to suggest everyone does is if you're comfortable, you can close your eyes. If you're not comfortable, don't worry about it. But get in a comfortable position in your chair. And no one's going to steal anything here. It's a from crowd. And what I'd like you to do is take a deep breath in and count through inhale and count to about three or four. And then exhale, and as you exhale, count to four. And then try it again. Breathe in slowly to the count of four. And then breathe out to the count of four. Okay. Breathe in, try it again. Some people may prefer to breathe through their mouth, their nose, whatever works for you. As you're breathing in and you're breathing out, what I'd like you to imagine is that you are flying away to a place where you feel safe, secure, and relaxed. It could be a place you've been to in the past. Try and stay with it, ladies. And it could be a place that you've been to in the past, a place where you feel very comfortable and secure. And you're there, you're breathing in and out, you're feeling more and more relaxed, more and more calm. And you can look into the blue sky above you, and you can see, as it were, a balloon floating. And all your worries are in that balloon. And it's floating further and further into the sky, and it's disappearing far away. And as you sit there, or whatever position you're in, you feel calmer and more confident about what's going to happen in the future. All your worries seem lighter, and you feel relaxed and calm and secure and confident about the future. And you can return to this place at any time in the future. You can use this exercise, this breathing exercise, if you're going to anything that you're nervous, an interview, a meeting, to relax yourself and to calm yourself down. And I count to four, and then we're going to come back to the room. One, two, three, four. If you'd ever like to come back to the room who's done this exercise. So what I would like to suggest is, this is a simple example and a very powerful example of where we can do actions which can help us calm ourselves down and come into a more stress-free relationship. Now, some people may like exercise, some people may just like music, but those things, alongside with dealing with it, are going to help you calm it down. Now, these three methods we just talked about can be brought together. Number one, understanding the root of the worry, trying to look at it rationally, sharing the emotional feeling behind it and maybe past trauma, and then looking for practical steps that a person can take to deal with it, as well as doing things which will relax you, living in a more healthy way. If a person is exhausted and tired, which maybe we all are, it may seem obvious, but one of the reasons why I get stressed out is we're just not getting enough sleep. It may be a very simple thing, but eating properly is going to have a dramatic effect on your ability to be stressed, and as well as your ability to be angry and what have your hormonal state. The last stage, transformation. This is a level, but this is the aim. The aim of Judaism is not just to control our self-destructive drives, but it's actually to transform them, to become a person in our topic who doesn't worry so much. So it can be the same situation and will not be overcome by worry. How do we do this? So what I would suggest, I'll go back to a case of social anxiety. Again, there was a famous psychotherapist called Albert Ellis, who was very shy. I don't know why I should say this in this context, but he was 18 years old, and he was very shy of women. For whatever reason, I don't know what his background was, but he was very, very shy. He was a very shy guy. So what did he do? He decided, it was in America, to walk around. This was probably in the 50s. This was very, sort of, it was not like our days. And he walked around, and he met as many people as he could speak to, but he would start conversations with them in the Bronx Zoo, Botanical Zoo in New York. I believe that he spoke, if I remember correctly, to 400 women in about 6 months by wandering around the zoo. Now, it's not like nowadays. There was nothing malicious or negative about this. He just would go up to people and say, well, I guess presumably, what do you think about flowers? Or, what do you think? It's like Kew Gardens in England. And when he repeated it enough times, he got over his fear. So this concept is essentially a Jewish concept. The Rambam tells us if we want to transform ourselves in any particular meter, you need to repeat it over and over again. And when you create a new habit, you will change the meter. And that's one of the reasons why in Judaism we repeat so many things. We say Shema over and over and over and over and over and again. We're constantly repeating ourselves. Why are we constantly repeating ourselves? Because eventually that idea will get deep and deep and deep into our subconscious. So essentially what we're saying is the transformation stage is if a person works through their worries, and essentially what's on a deeper level, there's a certain meter often that causes us to worry. It may be a lack of confidence, it may be, I don't know, whatever it is. If worrying is created by a lack of confidence or lack of calm or lack of patience, a person needs to work on that meter over and over again until they transform it in themselves. But ultimately that is a life's task. But that's the ultimate level of transformation, that we're not just stuck in this thing, but each year we're actually getting better at it. So to bring it together, essentially what we're saying, and why I call this method the active method, because it's essentially awareness, control, C, T for transformation.